That was the Nicol Ensing Band with A Child of the Snows, a track from their new album Riddles and Creeds, inspired by the poems of English writer, theologian and poet G.K. Chesterton. Now, Nicol Ensing is a Guelph, Ontario-based pianist and vocalist. She's classically trained, but in recent years she's also developed her folk side as pianist in the Celtic band The Wild Oats. Nicol has just released her debut album based on the work of G.K. Chesterton, Riddles and Creeds, and you can find that on Chanta Records. Nicol Ensing and Ross McKittrick join us in the studio for a feature-length conversation about the new album. So it's great to have you both join us today.
Thank you, Jan.
The new album is entitled Riddles and Creeds, and Nicol, I think this is your first album, is that right?
Yes, it is.
Before we start to talk about the album, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? Because if I understand this right, you actually were classically trained before you decided to explore your interests in folk, pop, and jazz.
Sure. Probably like a lot of kids, I took piano lessons when I was very young. But I got invited to play and sing in church. And through that, I was really encouraged to just branch out a little more. We do a lot of contemporary Christian worship there. And so I got a chance to try playing without music, and I loved that. So I ended up taking private lessons, which really supported my songwriting. And in just this recent year, I started taking jazz piano lessons, and just, you know, I needed to get out of a comfort zone of being really comfortable with certain chord positions and try something different. And there seems to be a bit of a jazz flavor coming out in the songs that I write, so that made sense to me to explore that a little more.
Now, this album is a little different because it's an album of poems by the English writer G.K. Chesterton. And if I gather things right, I think Ross McKittrick, who you will know from The Wild Oats, you kind of encouraged Nicol to explore the writings of G.K. Chesterton. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I had set up Chanta Records a few years ago to publish the music of The Wild Oats, and we did a couple of albums. Nicol has been playing with The Wild Oats for about 4 years. And then this year I decided to move in a different direction and start publishing other artists as well. And so Nicol is one of the first ones I spoke to. I knew she's a great vocalist and has a real knack for songwriting. And I just suggested as a project that these poems, I've liked G.K. Chesterton for a long time, and I think his poems are really interesting, and be nice to get them out there and give them some wider circulation. So I suggested it as a project, and fortunately she took it on, and I didn't know if it would be kind of restrictive to work to an existing set of lyrics like that, but as the winter wore on, the pace at which the music started coming out, I think it actually turned out to be a bit of an inspiration, because the music seemed to come together really well for it.
Yeah.
I think if I gather this rightly, it was just this year that you actually talked about, was it last winter you talked about doing this project?
We met in January to talk about it for the first time.
Wow. It's a great album. I love the sound. I love, obviously, the piano. There's always a great warmth within that type of music. But I'm very intrigued by the G.K. Chesterton connection. As somebody who, you know, grew up with poetry being a big part of my life, I'm certainly familiar with poets like Chesterton. There seems a real trend to take poets like Chesterton and put it to music. I know the Waterboys did it with Yeats.
That's right,
and there's a lot of other people who have been working at it. Tell us a little bit more about why you wanted to explore Chesterton musically.
I've read mostly his nonfiction work. I also really like the Father Brown Mysteries, but there's certain philosophical themes that go all through his writing, and I just find them really unique. He could never shake the impression that the world is actually this magical place, and it's far wilder than anything we could dream up in a fantasy world, and yet we stop seeing the magic of the world around us because we get so used to it. There's so much beautiful imagery there. He was extremely influential on C.S. Lewis and J.R.R. Tolkien, and so in a way his influence is still with us, but indirectly, and I find that once people actually encounter his writings and they start to see where a lot of these other authors got their inspiration from, they get quite hooked on him. So his poetry, as I looked at it and I could connect it back to a lot of his essays and philosophical writing, I thought it actually would be a neat project to see if we could set it to music, because I don't think anyone's ever tried. But the poems are very metrical and they're ballad-like, so they... it almost sounds to me like they were either written to be spoken out loud or written to be sung, and yet nobody had put them to music.
It's interesting you say they're spoken out loud, because in my former days, I used to do an awful lot of reading poetry out loud. It was my mother's way of correcting my accent problem. We joke a lot about the fact I went to elocution lessons as a kid. It's true, and I have to say, now I do radio a lot of the time. I actually love that, but at the time I hated it. But Nicole, tell us a little bit about the challenges of being given these beautiful poems to try and put them to music.
Well, what's interesting is that for me, when I write, usually the music comes first. And so I'll sit at the piano and I'll start to play. And there's certain chord transitions that make sense to me, and certain inversions that I really enjoy. But some of these songs I actually wrote in my van. I had taken my daughter to university for the day and was hanging around waiting for her, and I had the poetry beside me and a phone, and I just started singing. So it was a little bit freeing, because usually I'm with my piano, right? But this was making me think in a different way, and those songs, in fact, sound a little different than my usual way that I write. So it's like Ross said, it just flows. There's this beautiful lyrical quality to it that just lends itself to music so easily that we didn't even need to change a lot of the words very often. You could just sing it.
So tell us a little bit about the first track. We played that at the start of the interview. That is A Child of the Snows, which is a great introduction, because what I love about the album is it really kind of draws you in and makes you want to listen more. So tell us a little bit about how that track came together itself.
I think that in general, I just pick a key that's comfortable and then just start to sing, start to play a chord. Okay, and how does this feel? Where is this headed? And so that one ended up with this kind of push, this tempo that just drew you in, right? And at last we win to the ancient inn. And so there's this height, like we made it somewhere, right? And so then you start to feel the music grow into it. It's a difficult thing to explain how songwriting happens, because it just sort of does.
Chesterton has a really kind of a muscular and vivid vocabulary. So the words, the dark is alive with rain, the nights are strong with the darkness long. And I hear that in the song as Nicole's singing, that those lines almost force you to increase the energy and the strength in the music itself. So they are the kind of lyrics that draw out a certain kind of music that goes with each one. And as Nicole mentioned, so some of the tunes you were at the piano when you wrote, and so they tend to be the really chord-based ones. And then there was another couple that I'd already noticed, they sounded a little different. And then it was later you told me that you were in the van when you wrote those. So I guess you would have been working more with the melody line as you're singing rather than starting with the chords. And that one, The Child of the Snows, also there, just the rhythm of the lyrics, it imposes itself on the music as well, that you just, the two work together, you get this rhythm going in the music.
Now, it is a song about the nativity. I mean, that's the theme here. But can we explore a little bit about the mythology behind all of that? Because isn't that a lot of what Chesterton was about in his writing? You mentioned at the start of this interview about how he really wanted people to explore beyond the physical that we tend to see every day.
He has an essay in a book of his called The Everlasting Man about the nativity, and he talks about the role of mythology in very simple societies among shepherds and people that work the land, using mythology as a way of searching. And his picture of the nativity is in a sense the shepherds finally found their shepherd, and that was the end of mythology. And it ties in with the time in the life of the Roman Empire, where their poetry was falling apart, and the their philosophers are sort of at a loss for what to do next. And so this, the image that comes out here is, as Nicole quoted, "At night we wind to the ancient inn," this journey that reaches its ending point. And you wouldn't necessarily pick up on it when you first look at it that this is about the nativity. And there's just that one little line at the end, "And a child comes forth alone." And so you have this searching, "The gods lie cold where the leaves lie gold, you know, the gods lie dead where the leaves lie red." Everything seems to be coming to an end, and then you're left with this image at the end, "A child comes forth alone." And so you have this image of something new is actually starting.
That actually I found most interesting. And I also want to say how much I enjoy the liner notes. Now, I gather the liner notes, unfortunately, are not in with the album if people purchase it. But will they be available for people if we want to download them?
Oh, yes. It's a free download at the chanterrecords.com website. Just look for the CD page for Riddles and Creeds, and it's a free download. But it was too long to try to include with the CD package.
Well, it's excellent because you actually get the lyrics of the poem, which are in the CD package itself, but also a little bit of an explanation that I think, Ross, you wrote yourself that just explains the story behind the poem itself.
I was a bit leery about doing this because I'm not a Chesterton scholar or anything, but I sent it to the president of the American Chesterton Society, and he was really enthusiastic about it and said they might print this in their magazine. So I guess I must have got enough right that the actual experts like what I wrote.
Let's play another track from the CD. What would you like us to play, Nicole?
I love A Second Childhood.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
So that one seemed a little deeper to me, and maybe a little harder to interpret. And in fact, often as I was writing, Ross would say, would correct me and say, "Actually, Chesterton meant this." You know, I felt like sometimes I had this level of understanding, and then he would go, "Okay, but did you know that you should put that line back in because this is an important line?" And so we had a lot of that discussion with this song. I think I love it too because it's the most jazzy version on the album, and I do really enjoy jazz music.
And I think this was this one of the hardest poems to adapt for the album?
Yeah, and actually, this is when Nicole found. She'd worked through all the ones that I'd given her, and then you went online and wanted to find some more, and this was one of the ones that you picked. This was tricky because the verses are actually 6 lines long, and we did have to work with a 4-line structure, and so it took a fair amount of editing on this one, but there's enough repetition in the themes that we're able to preserve all the meaning. And some of the lines here, though, are they're so memorable, and it's partly because he has this idea right at the center of the poem about "I got used to grief and joy, but not to night and day," and what he's saying is he always had this sense in life that the most repetitive things in nature are actually the most miraculous. Just the idea that the sun comes up every day and then it gets night, it never stops surprising him. So the huge things in life that happen once in a while, you know, grief and joy and all the great big things, he could get used to that, but he just never lost his sense of wonder that the sun comes up every morning. And it's such a remarkable thought that someone could keep that childlike outlook all through his life.
That's really interesting, because it really speaks to that road to enlightenment, mm-hmm. being through repetition, and rather than actually looking for this great, necessarily looking for this great awakening. Mm-hmm. We're taking a break. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio. I'm Jan Hall. My guests today are Nicole Ensing and Ross McKittrick. We're talking about the new Nicole Ensing Band CD. It is entitled Riddles and Creeds. Now, I do want to mention at this point that there is a CD launch for Riddles and Creeds. It takes place at the Albion upstairs. Remember, that's 49 Norfolk Street in Guelph on Sunday, November the 2nd. It's a 7:30 p.m. show with a cover of $10. It's a beautiful, beautiful album, so definitely check it out and check out the show in Guelph. This is the Nicole Ensing Band and the beautiful A Second Childhood. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio. I'm Jan Hall. That is the Nicole Ensing Band with Second Childhood. It's a track from her new CD. It's entitled Riddles and Creeds. You can find that on the Chanter Records label. If you go to chanterrecords.com, you can order those online. My guests on Folk Roots Radio today are Nicole Ensing and Ross McKittrick, who is the producer of Riddles and Creeds. He is also, I'm going to call you the head honcho at Chanter Records.
You know, President and CEO.
President and CEO. One of the things I love about this CD, and actually the others that I've had a chance to experience from Chanter Records, is the quality that goes into it. You hear it in the music, you see it in the materials, the whole package. When you decided, and you can tell us whether you actually decided you wanted a record label, but my sense is that that's very important to you, to try and make sure that the albums that you do put out on Chanter Records have a certain level of quality.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly not work I really plan to get into, but so we had the Wild Oats, and it was fun. We were initially just doing some Christmas music at local churches, and then hit upon this idea of recording an album to raise funds for World Vision. And I think from the beginning, I thought, I don't want this to sound like a charity album. I don't want this to be the sort of thing people buy it because they feel guilty and it's kind of a crappy album and they listen to it once and that's it. I thought, well, no, if I'm going to make people pay for this, it's got to sound really good. And nowadays, it's actually easier to make really good quality recordings. There's enough, the technology has changed. And so you can get access at a reasonable cost to good recording facilities. And then the other side of it is making sure the arrangements are nicely thought through and the band is well prepared. For the Dog-Eared Hymnal, which I was in last year talking to you about, a lot of the work that went into that was making sure the instrumentation was just really rich and gives people a lot to listen to on the album. And then that one and Riddles and Creeds, we worked at Revelation Sound in Guelph with Brad Dugas, who's our sound engineer. And he's extremely skilled. It's just a pleasure to work with him. He's great in the studio, just miking things really carefully, making sure the sound quality is really good. And then at the mixing stage, it's surprising how much has to go right at the mixing stage to make the final product sound good. And then the other part of it is the packaging. I have the good fortune of working with Georgia Budd, who's a great graphic artist and designer, and we come up with some nice packaging. Now, at the end of that, though, it has to be good music. And so what you're hearing on the album here is a lot of really great compositions. And so that goes back to the band and to Nicole.
Well, the thing that is wonderful about this is a great sound. I mean, it's there's a dreamy quality there. Was that your intention with this? It is the last track on the album. And obviously, The Second Childhood is very much reflecting on what comes afterwards. Was that your intent, to really try and leave this thought with the people listening to the song?
I think what happens is that the lyrics inform the music. So, you know, it is like a dream. You mentioned that. And so you bring out that quality. And so there was that sense of awe, right? No matter how long I look, I'm never going to stop being amazed at things. And so that sense of awe then says how the music is going to be. And then if you're in another song, By the Babe Unborn, for example, is a really childlike quality to it. And so that makes it a completely different song then. And you approach it in a completely different manner.
When I heard this song, I thought this would be perfect for the end of the album because it has that lingering quality to it. It is very reflective and has that dreamlike tone. And so I didn't know the order for the rest of the album, but I knew I wanted this one at the end.
So tell us a little bit about the band that you're playing with.
So Sam Fitzpatrick and Joel Sipkiss are guys that I have known a very long time and have played with them for years. And so when I was ready to pull together my own band, I knew right away who to go to for bass. I definitely wanted Sam to play. And he is, both Sam and Joel are very young. But Sam's goal is to get into Humber to study jazz. And I really have grown to appreciate jazz a lot more over the last couple of years, partly because of a connection I have with Jason Razzo, who's a bass musician in Guelph. He's phenomenal. And so I wanted that element, and I knew Sam could bring that. And then Joel has a really casual way of drumming that just fit the style. And then we didn't really know who was going to play guitar. And then Ross happened to bump into someone at a meeting somewhere, and he told me, you should meet this guy, Brian Bork. Now, Brian Bork is the chaplain at Laurier and the University of Waterloo. I went and we went and had sushi together one day, and I said, okay, why don't you come and jam with us? And he came, and it was like, yes, this is the guy. So again, he's got a very eclectic sense. Sensibility for music, but the jazz is something he's really exploring, and that fit us. I cannot profess to be a jazz musician at all. You know, that's much where the folk comes from, and we make an interesting blend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find Brian and Nicole and Sam especially, you're just very versatile, and so you start with a certain sound, and I've sat in on just a couple of the rehearsals, but just the chemistry between them, the choice of instruments, the choice of guitar work, you can really go in whatever direction the song needs, and that's one of the things that comes out. So on the album, The Aristocrat, for instance, just needed a totally different kind of sound. There's a lot of really bluesy guitar on that. We put a couple of layers in, and Brian just went with it. It was great that he's versatile that way.
Let's play that track just now. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio. I'm Jan Hall. My guest today in the studio, Nicole Ensing from the Nicole Ensing Band, and Ross McKittrick, who is her producer and also the head of Chanter Records. We're talking about the great new album by the Nicole Ensing Band. It's entitled Riddles and Creeds. And remember, they do have their launch in Guelph on Sunday, November the 2nd. Takes place at the Albion upstairs. Check out folkrootsradio.com for all the details. This is the Nicole Ensing Band and The Aristocrat. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Folks are rich and clever. April Fool, let's play behind its door. Where the fool remains forever and the April comes no more. Where the splendor of the daylight goes drearier than the dark. And life is like a vulture that once was such a lark.
That is the Nicole Ensing Band with a song entitled The Aristocrat. It's from the album Riddles and Creeds, which has just been released on Chanta Records. The interesting thing about this album is all of the lyrics are composed by G.K. Chesterton, who I think died in 1936.
Long time ago.
My guests today are Nicole Ensing and Ross McKittrick from Chanta Records. When you listen to that song and the way that it rocks and moves along, mm-hmm. though, and you pick this up for the first time, you wouldn't think, oh my God, these are really old lyrics, because it's actually a poem by Chesterton.
Right, right. And then it has this modern edge to it then, right? But it's a cautionary tale, and I think it deserved some sort of edginess to it to make you really sit up and listen to what is being said there.
Now, the best music, I always find, works on many levels, and that's one of the things I love about this album. You have, obviously, Nicole's piano. You have the wonderful musicianship from the other people on the album. Mm-hmm. But then you have the depth of the lyrics that we talked about. The neat thing here is the incredible crossover potential, because, Nicole, you're trained classically, mm-hmm. but this album definitely has strong pop and jazz stylings within it. A little bit of folkiness there as well.
This album is a little different from the other ones that I'm putting out this fall as well. I have some straight folk music coming out, and there they just kind of plug into a channel. You know where this has to go, and you know the kind of venues. With Riddles and Creeds, as you mentioned, you've got sort of a pop basis, but it moves in different directions. And so we've struggled when we have to come up with a description. I mean, what kind of music is it? And you don't want to just say, well, it's a bit of everything, because it does have a unique flavor to it. And as we think about how to build an audience, I guess a big part of it is just if you can get people to take that first listen, because I think people will get hooked when they hear it once and realize it's also a question of who it reminds you of. So I find it reminds me of artists that Nicole's never heard of, so I can't really say, well, you were influenced by Gary Brooker of Procol Harum, if she's never heard of Procol Harum before.
No.
Now, people do compare it to Sarah McLachlan, so people will hear similarities that way. But I would also say piano-based pop and folk music, it's a bit harder to trace the influences. Like, so many people are guitar-based, and there's so many similarities once you get into guitar-based music, but piano-based music does, I think, tend to be much more individual-oriented or individualist in its styling.
I'd like to move and play another track from the album just now, and I want to play one of my favorites so far, and that is The Great Minimum. Can you tell us a little bit about that song?
Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first songs that I wrote when I was looking through Chesterton's poetry. And I sent it to Ross. I was sending him everything that I wrote. Sometimes, you know, I had spent half an hour or an hour on it, and I sent it to him already. And this was one where I just thought, ugh, I don't like it. It just seemed really awkward. Something about the lyrics seemed to not flow as well as the other poetry did, and so I kind of put it away. And then as we were talking about the songs that were going on the album, Ross kept saying, where's The Great Minimum? And I kept saying, it's awful. That's not going on. He goes, no, this one needs to go on. So I took another look at it, and Whether it's because I had been spending months immersed in Chesterton's work, or I'm not sure why, but it suddenly came together really well. It became a very powerful song. It's one of our favorites as a band to play. We have, you know, our six favorites on the album. And it's the one song where people come to us later and say that it really moved them.
So tell us a little bit about where Chesterton was going with The Great Minimum.
Well, it does come back to this idea of his noticing the really basic things, and that just existence to him was an overwhelming gift. And so it's not the bare minimum, it's the great minimum. It's the least of all things is just also the greatest of all things, the privilege of having been alive. And so it's a song about remembrance. So he's thinking of all these just very ordinary things in life, you know, to have wept and to have sat together with friends and to have remembered brave friends from the past, and all these things that are very ordinary. And he just has this refrain about them. It was something, you know, it wasn't nothing. It really mattered. And so it's building up this very simple theme, and yet it comes back to, again, the most basic thing of all, just having existed at this time together was an extraordinary gift.
You've just given me goosebumps. Mm. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio. I'm Jan Hall. Another track from the Nick Hall Unsing Band, from the wonderful Riddles and Creeds. This is The Great Minimum.
It is something to have wept as we have wept. It is something to have done as we have done. It is something to have watched when all men slept and seen the stars which never see the sun. It is something to have smelt the mystic rose, though it break and leave the thorny rot. It is something to have hungered once as those must hunger who have ate the bread of God. Oh, for they have heard. Oh, blessed be our eyes, for they have seen. Let the thunder break on man and beast and bird and the lightning. It is something to have to have known things that from the weak are furled, fearful passions, ancient, strange, and high. It is something to be wiser than the world. It is something to be older than the sky. To have seen you and your unforgotten face, it was brave as trumpets for the fray. It was pure as lilies in their place. It was something though you went from me today. Oh, blessed be our ears, for they have heard. Something to have been. of skeptic moths and rust. Fattened lives that of their sweetness tire. In a world of fading loves and lust, it is something to be sure of a desire. And bird and the lightning, it is something to have been. It is something. It is something.
That's the Nicole Ensing Band with a song entitled The Great Minimum from the album Riddles and Creeds. My guests today on Folk Roots Radio are Nicole Ensing and Ross McKittrick from Chanter Records. Now, the launch for this album takes place on Sunday, November the 2nd, upstairs at the Albion. You must be excited about this.
Very much.
Takes time to make a record. We've talked about the recording process, getting the packaging and everything, and then you have that album in your hands. Can you tell us a little bit about what people can expect when they come to that show?
I think they can expect surprises because there's not a consistent sound, right? So we might, when you heard The Aristocrat, there's a high energy to that, but when you heard A Second Childhood, and there's that mellowness to it, and melancholy perhaps, and so we really researched a wide range of emotions, and I think what I do is I pour out what I'm feeling into my music, and so they can expect to be brought along perhaps a roller coaster of emotions.
Can you talk a little bit about how people can get that copy of Riddles and Creeds?
To order the physical CD, you go to chanterrecords.com and then just look for the Riddles and Creeds page, and you can order it that way. You can get a copy at the launch concert as well on the 2nd of November at the Albion. And then if you want MP3 copies, they should be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, CD Baby, all the major online retailers. So I'm hoping that people will actually take an interest in the CD itself, because it does have the lyrics in the booklet, and I think once people listen to it, they're going to want to read along with the lyrics, because there's a lot to them.
And the great liner notes, which you can get at chanterrecords.com.
Yes, mm-hmm. The liner notes, it's a free download from chanterrecords.com. Yeah.
So Nicole, what is the future going to bring? You've created this album. It's always an awkward question. You're doing a CD launch, and I'm asking you questions about the future, but what do you hope to do next with your music?
I would like to continue writing. I've been writing for 20 years. This is something that I love and I would do whether anything happened to it or not. But it's really exciting to go out to new audiences. There's a great energy that comes out of playing for people who are enjoying what you do, and definitely want to keep doing that. But yeah, explore what another project might be.
Well, look, I wanted to wish you all the best for this album. It's a fabulous album. Remember, the album is entitled Riddles and Creeds. You can find it on Chanter Records, their record label, and I would definitely encourage you to check out their website. Their website is chanterrecords.com. Ross, I want to thank you for coming in again today. It's a great pleasure having Ross McKittrick from Chanter Records and Nicole Ensing in the studio with us. What are we going to finish with today?
We're going to finish with The Rolling English Road.
So tell us a little bit about that song.
Well, this was a matter of interpretation. When I read these words, I saw a real I felt a real sense of dismay at something that someone had done and that they were apologetic. And then Ross told me later that actually this is like a rousing pub song that they would sing, and it's a bit of a joke. It's like, really? I didn't get that at all. So it's a little bit of a different take on a poem that many people might love for its comedy.
It is a bit of a joke. It's Chesterton is talking about all these meandering roads through England and taking crazy routes to get from one place to another that you'd never actually go that way because they're completely in opposite directions. But it becomes this image for the idea of not being in a hurry to get from A to B in life. It's to take the meandering road and follow these detours, and that's where a lot of life actually happens, and we encounter it in these side routes. And then at the end, he ties that together with this beautiful image of this. There's still so much yet to discover, fine things to discover and good news yet to hear before we get to paradise by way of Kensal Green. And Kensal Green is a cemetery in London. Mm-hmm. And so it's just reminding you, don't be in a big hurry to get places, because it's in the little meandering paths that you'll actually encounter life.
I think that's a perfect way to finish the interview. Great pleasure having Nicole Ensing from the Nicole Ensing Band and Ross McKittrick from Chanter Records with us in the studio. We'll leave you today with the Rolling English Road. You're listening to Folk Roots Radio, and I'm Jan Hall.
Thanks, Jan.
Thank you, Jan.
Above him when they found him in the ditch. Oh well, God pardon us. No.
we did not see so clear.